Okay, when was the last time you read a book? And more importantly, how did you read that book? Did you do it the old-fashioned way, sitting in a comfy chair, maybe in front of a fire, turning the pages and tuning out the world? Or did somebody else read it to you, maybe while you drove around doing errands or while you walked your dog? The Audio Publishers Association says that according to a recent study, nearly one in four Americans has listened to at least one audiobook. And they say audiobooks brought in more than $900 million last year. Now, that's still a fraction of what the entire book publishing industry makes, but it's growing every year. So, who listens to audiobooks? How are they produced? And most importantly, if you listen to an audiobook, can you claim that you read it? Here to answer these questions for us is Eileen Hutton. She's the Vice President and Associate Publisher of Brilliance Audio. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing fine. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
First things first, Eileen, let's get to that question that I just rattled off. If you listen to an audiobook, do you get to claim credit for reading it?
Of course you do.
You
Of course
do?
you do. Print is a very new concept in the history of mankind. For most of our existence on this planet, storytelling was spoken word. From Oedipus and all of the Greek myths, all of that was storytelling passed down around campfires and from city to city.
When people are listening to audiobooks, are they usually or sometimes doing something else? They're kind of multitasking, and does that divert your attention from the narrative?
Well, when you're sitting down and focused on reading a book, you can hold the book and you can read with your eyes. But when you're driving a car, when you're out exercising, when you're doing the vacuuming or the laundry or the ironing, you can still read with your ears. And that's what more and more people are choosing to do today. Our lives are way too busy to spend a lot of time sitting. So people have turned to audiobooks as a way to get that storytelling, to get all of the books they want to consume.
When did audiobooks really take off as a separate industry?
As a separate industry in the early 80s, there were some small companies around prior to that, but they were mostly archival for libraries. Brilliance Audio started in 1984 with the goal to bring unabridged audio to the bookstore market, and no one had ever thought of doing that before.
Who were you initially marketing this to? People who maybe were elderly and couldn't read, or?
No, to readers. Just we saw that as another way to deliver the contents of a book. Early on, there was a lot of that stigma. It was for people who couldn't see as well, or people who had difficulty reading one way or the other. I think that stigma's pretty much gone away.
Let's talk about the process of recording an audiobook. How long does it usually take?
Well, it depends, of course, on the length of the book, because we do all of our books on a bridge. So, a 7-hour project would finished project would take a lot less hours in the studio than, say, a 24-hour science fiction fantasy novel. But the average book to do the unabridged and an abridged version would take a seasoned narrator about a week in the studio.
Let's talk about what a seasoned narrator is, who I imagine a lot of the success really does depend on who's reading it. Who are these people? Who are the stars in this industry?
Oh, the stars in the industry are legend. Jim Dale, of course, who brought the entire Harry Potter series to life, and then the Peter and the Starcatcher series. But also people like Dick Hill, who was a stage actor who very early on began narrating audiobooks. Scott Brick, who is just a phenomenon. George Goodall. I mean, audiobook narrators actually have followings. They have fan clubs, if you will, not organized probably, but fan clubs, people who will walk into a bookstore and say, I want everything narrated by Dick Hill.
That is so interesting. So they're less interested even in the title or who wrote the original book than the
They
narrator
want
who's
that
reading
performance.
it.
They
We
want that performance.
do have a clip from Scott Brick. He's narrating Michael Pollan's Botany of Desire. Let's listen to a little bit of this.
Okay.
In the space of this garden, I tell myself, I alone determine which species will thrive and which will disappear. I'm in charge here, in other words, and behind me stand other humans still more in charge. The long chain of gardeners and botanists, plant breeders, and these days, genetic engineers who selected, developed, or bred the particular potato that I decided to plant.
How are
amazing.
How are narrators matched with books, Eileen?
We look at it as any other performance. We look to see the material that we're going to be recording, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, first person, third person, omniscient, and we try to match it with the voice and the talents of a given narrator. For example, you know, if it's told from the point of view of an 80-year-old black woman in the Deep South, you probably wouldn't want Scott reading it. Scott, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Clearly not an 80-year-old black woman from the Deep South.
Exactly. You know, you have to have people who can do the correct accents, who sound like the main character in one sense.
Now, is it enough to have a nice voice or to be a good actor or reader? What's the specific skill set that's particular to audiobooks?
You know, I probably get 100 emails a week from people who say, my grandchildren tell me I have a wonderful speaking voice and I should narrate audiobooks. It really does take a specific skill set. And we find that stage actors are actually the best at it. Usually not the author, you know, God love them, they can write up a storm, but that doesn't necessarily mean they can bring the word to life in a spoken audio. Jim Dale, stage actor, great example of somebody who can do a million different characters. Dick Hill was a stage actor. Many of the best ones were stage actors at one time or still are.
I got to actually, it was a treat, I got to watch Jim Dale record an audiobook, a new book by an author named Tom Flynn. It's called The Bike Man. It's an epic poem about September 11th and Tom's experience. And I think what was so interesting, I heard Jim was recording the work, and the woman who was kind of serving as the coach or the producer through this was listening through her headphones, and she heard him read something, and she said, wait, Jim, stop, do it over. You made that sound like a comma. I want it to sound more like a period.
No signs foretell the darkness, heat, and fear about to descend upon us this forever September morning. Unnoted, it is the fishing line to the fish, a threat unseen.
Jim, I'm sorry. Unnoted, maybe a little bit more of a period right there. It seemed like a comma. The way you read it, right there, I cannot grasp.
That's really specific, and that narrator needs to understand what that means.
Exactly. They need to be able to bring the work to life in a way that the print just doesn't. You know, they're interpreting the author's words. They have to be so faithful to the author's intent when they're reading it.
What is the narrator's relationship with the text before they get in there? In this particular situation where I was watching Jim Dale, he had come to this very raw. He had read through the poem one time, mm-hmm. and then he sat down in the studio, and he did it not in one take, but in one sitting.
Pretty much nailed it.
Yeah. But is that unusual? I mean, usually do people practice reading this before they get in the studio?
No. The best narrators can do it after reading the material and prepping the material in their own way. Some of them use highlighters to mark different specks of dialogue, especially in fiction. You know, they'll use a pink highlighter to highlight all of the dialogue by the female, the heroine, blue for the hero, green for the villain, whatever their color choices may be, so that as their eyes go down the page, they're preparing to change their voices just a little bit to be that new character.
Do narrators, there's a history of using multiple actors in books, though, correct, mm-hmm. also?
We did that early on. In Brilliance's first years, we did all of our productions as multi-voice, full cast. It's very, very expensive, and it literally has to be cast the way you do a movie. You want to bring the actor in and have him or her do all of his bits and pieces. And then, you know, at the end, everything gets assembled into one cohesive whole. Very expensive, very time-consuming. It's not done as much these days.
Eileen Hutton, the Vice President and Associate Publisher of Brilliance Audio. Thanks so much, Eileen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
So BPP video producer and I, Wynn Rosenfeld, we took a visit down to an audiobook studio in Midtown Manhattan. You can see the inner workings of what that was like. How do you record a book? That is going to be on our blog, npr.org/Bryant Park.